Right. Hi, guys.
Hi.
We're back. It's 2019.
Happy New Year.
It sounds like a year from the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're back in. It's week 2 of January, but it's our first week back in the woods. Did you have a good Christmas? Did you have a good break?
Yes.
That's very flat.
Yeah. Well, I realised I've been saying the same thing about my Christmas to that question, and it ends up being like, yeah, great. And then some like little negative little moments pop in about the Christmas, and then I was getting on quite a bit of a downer about it. And I was like, it was a positive experience overall. Why am I repeating this negative story?
It's a bit of a conversational set piece, isn't it?
Yeah. You just repeat the same phrases, and it was good, but glad to be back.
Oh, my set piece has been... Yeah, it was uneventful, which is kind of good.
Yes, that's... I have heard this phrase. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But the new year, often a time for goal setting and reevaluating, and we finished up last time, didn't we? Looking through the whole year.
Yes.
So I thought we'd have a chat about goal setting, both for us and in the context of Forest School. Do you have a personal New Year's resolution that you feel that you want to?
Ooh,
you don't have to.
Well, my personal one is very, very dull, but one of those. It's to be more financially savvy is my New Year's resolution for my personal finances, family finances, all the rest of it. Because I feel like I sometimes take a bit of a back seat on that. I just go, oh yeah, it just sort of magically happens, la la la. And then I think, you know, when you do your tax return and you're like, okay, like these numbers actually mean something and I could have some more awareness of this throughout the year as opposed to just December and January when you go, okay. So that's my very boring one. And I guess also maybe doing that as a family a little bit more, maybe, kind of...
Getting the kids into the stress.
Planning things rather than just,
That is how you can end up spending quite a lot of money, I think, if your kids are preschool age or home-edding. If you fully go down that, like, unschooling route of, like, we'll wake up and see what we feel like, and you realise that everything is really expensive, and it's much harder to plan and, like, even just... If I have Baron for the day, I feel like if I go out and I'm like, oh, hungry, let's just get some lunch.
Yeah.
And you realise that you do that every week and you've spent a crazy amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
I think my mine is to sort of get... It's a constant thing, but it's just to sort of, like, get everything that I can onto autopilot so that I'm less... Not so far as the Steve Jobs, you know, same shirt and same... whatever it is every day, but I do quite enjoy having less decision making to do, and just like, right, well, you get up and you do the thing and then you do that, and less less unpredictability, I think, is my personal one.
Yep.
And we have a company one, don't we? Well, kind of paired one that we're going for.
Yeah, we have a theme for the year. What was last year's?
Order. Last year was the year of order.
The year of order.
Or it was the year of kind of like predictability.
Yes.
And that kind of going, right, we're not going to realise a week before half term and scramble and panic to advertise. Yeah. We're going to stop. Yeah. We put loads of stuff in place that's like,
that's right.
Now is the time that we advertise this, and now is the time that we open up that.
And we were more seasonal because of that, weren't we? So we put in all of our sort of seasonal family festivals, you know, at the beginning of the year, and they were all there, and it was all very...
And also that we had a shift where we, in the last year, have moved from a sort of casual member of staff to now multiple members of, so, you know, there's now six of us, which then requires more predictability because people can't just go, oh, am I working next week? Okay, guess so. We needed that. But this year, is the year of nature connection.
Indeed.
That was our... And it's less of a, like, I think lots of people fail at their resolutions because they try and go really hard line, really fast. Like going, I'm going to go to the gym. People who've never been to a gym then go, I'm going to go every morning at 6 o'clock, and it's not sustainable. I think of it more, they talk in one of the podcasts that I listen to about year themes. And they talk about it as more of like a lens. for looking at things through. So like when you're thinking about planning, it's just like an overhead projector piece of acetate that just kind of lays over what you're doing and think. Because I think the nature connection thing is something that we do think is valuable, but is harder to...
Yeah, and I guess we're talking here about more tightly focused nature connection activities in our sessions. So obviously we're in the woods, we're entirely outdoors, there is nature all around us.
There's osmosis, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. There's osmosis and there are spontaneous things that happen. People notice things, children notice things. A robin flies into the circle, you know, these things happen, obviously. That is all part of nature connection. But I think we've sort of made a decision to... focus the lens, I guess, and make it a built-in part of some of our sessions where we can. So we've done it for some sessions in the beginning, so after we might have done a circle time, we've done an activity that deliberately is set up to give that sense of nature connection.
I think it's... we said, didn't we, it does come at the sacrifice of it being... child-led. Well, not. It's not the sacrifice of it being child-led, because...
But it's more adult-led. It's more us.
It's more leading. Adult-led, and it's activities that, compared to our activities, quite often, I would say, are, like, the planning or activity that we do is more in terms of, I will get these resources out, and then I will see what happens with them.
And facilitating play, basically.
Yeah. whereas what we're trying out is those sort of nature connection activities that need a little bit of, right, guys, just listen to let me go through these steps, and it's almost
it's more guided, isn't it?
It's more guided,
like a kind of guided meditation almost, which and the activities are often a bit weird for people to do. They're not the normal kind, you know. It's just like, sit really still and close your eyes for quite an uncomfortable amount of time, or run your hands over this particular tree or whatever that people, like grown-ups and children, might find alien, and they're kind of being instructed to all sort of do it at the same time. Not that we're going, you must do it.
but
it is, that's our aim, to try and get as many people as possible to actually take part, to then feel the benefit of it.
Those
things definitely work less well if you're doing it with one person whilst the rest of the group is like running around playing a chasing game. You know, they definitely are more beneficial if you've got the right environment and the right mood with the whole group, I would say, or as many of the group as possible.
Well, we said, haven't we, that there's a couple of groups where they're almost like linchpin children, where because if a kid, you know, if we said, oh, we're going to sit here and we're going to close our eyes and listen, and one kid goes, no, I'm going to go off and play in the mud kitchen, or I'm going to go and do digging or whatever, we wouldn't go, no, sit down, you have to do this. But once that child goes, it just starts that little like, oh, okay, right, we're going to go.
Yeah.
Completely. And you end up with trying to do it with like one child, and then that's more uncomfortable, and then,
yeah, it just doesn't work. And it's one of the kind of perennial forest school issues, isn't it, about child-led versus adult-led, and like, you know, how far on that scale do you go? Because some children need more support and more guidance for whatever reason. And for some children, actually, it would be beneficial for them to accept that the rest of the group or some people in the group would really appreciate it if they were able to sit and listen for this amount of time. Because, you know, if we're talking about safety or something like that, and giving some instructions that they do need to listen to, I can't really think of any groups now where the children, I think we've got a relationship with those.
That's the difference. Yeah, that is the difference, isn't it?
Where you go, actually, I know you really want to go and play, but we need to listen to this to keep safe. None of our children at that point would go, no, I'm off. They would listen.
And I think that we used the bank account metaphor when we were talking about emotionally putting in or taking out.
Yeah.
But I do think there is like a relationship bank account where, because we've had, with most of the kids, a length of time where you could say day one, like, oh, we'll never do anything, and you could say whatever you want, but actually you need 6 to 12 weeks of showing them that you aren't going to do that, or you do know about this, or you are, you know, you are a good person, that then if you say, guys, you start a lot of the nature connection stuff with like, this might be weird, just bear with me for 2 minutes. If it doesn't work, we can bail.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're then pulling from that relationship bank account that you've put in through weeks of, sure, you can go, you know, I'm not worried about it. Sure, you can go, I'm not, because of all the times that you do let them have complete free rein and choose, they're more willing to kind of go, all right, I'll give you a few minutes.
Yeah, completely. And that is really rewarding as well. So if you never asked them to do that, they wouldn't ever experience that reward of like, oh, I've just enriched your life by giving you that forum and listening to you and taking part in what you're suggesting. That is, you know, as well as the benefit that we're aiming for, which is the nature connection, which is that feeling of being closer to nature and being part of nature, which for lots of people they never have anywhere else. So,
and they do help to I know lots of settings have like a physical barrier, either a gate or an archway or a path, that they, as part of the like getting into the forest school mentality, you know, you've got that physical thing of like, we've gone through the archway now, and for lots of teachers they go, I'm no longer Mr. Ames, I'm now Brown Beaver or whatever it, I don't know. I'm not some people have forest school names, don't they? And that, but we don't have that because we're on a permanent site and people arrive in dribs and drabs.
Yeah.
You don't have that sort of collective thing at the start. You have to pull them back in, and just by doing a welcome circle, we've interrupted play.
Yeah.
Because they come in and they're immediately in play. Mm. So doing a lot of the nature connection activities are more still or more focused on like
senses
or fine motor things or stuff that involves sort of looking, whereas I think lots of children, their natural first play is big gross motor running, building, climbing, throwing this thing, but I've definitely found that when we do the nature connection at the start, it just seeps into everybody's kind of mentality, and you do get that weird I've been to places before where I've sat with a group of adults at the start of every day. They're not retreats, but they're more they're on the line of communes, let's say. And you sit and you just sit still with people for a couple of minutes every morning, and you say absolutely nothing. But there's something about that that then there's a, it does wear off through the day, but immediately afterwards, even though you've said nothing to these people, you feel so connected because you shared that. Yeah. That thing, and so if it's sitting quietly and listening to the birds, for example, you've just shared something with the whole group, and you have this, you know, very interesting kind of way that then seeps in, and it sounds very manipulative to say that it makes behaviour management. I'm going to say it makes behaviour management different, because you've tuned in everyone's brave. I don't know what it is. I'm sure someone would know that it's like, oh, everyone's using their alpha waves or their, you know, beta waves or whatever it is. But there's definitely something when you do nature connection.
Yeah.
Or the ones that connect you to your body give you that weird sense then that like, oh, okay, we're going to go and do this. And I'm actually, I'm not sure. I think for a lot of children as well, it gives them a moment, even if they're not necessarily involved in the connection part of it, but that it gives them a moment of stillness to let their mind wander, and then when you stop and you go, okay, I'm done, if you want to go, let's go, do whatever, they've had that time to go, I'm going to go to the hole, I reckon, to the digging hole, and actually I'm going to need two shovels to get there, oh, and I think I'll need a wheelbarrow, oh, and I'm going to make that, oh, and I'll need those sticks to go over there, whereas sometimes when they arrive and they just go without a plan, they just go rah, and then they're frustrated that the shovels aren't there, or they haven't, you know, just those moments of clarifying what they want to do is really beneficial.
Yeah,
I think that's it. So that's a big waffle on our theme. Do you have any sort of like thoughts if you're setting goals for yourself, you know, professionally or personally, that you go, oh, I try and set goals like this, or I don't set goals like this?
I think you're much more organised on that front than I am. and you listen to a lot of podcasts and things that talk about that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and read a lot more about life management, I guess. So no, I don't. I'm a bit more all over the place. I tend to notice that I have a need once the scales have tipped in a certain direction. So I'll go, okay, I'm feeling really drained, or I'm feeling like I really need to spend some time in flow now, and therefore I'm going to make a decision that every Wednesday afternoon I'm going to do some carving. Or, yeah, I'm reactive.
Quite reactive planning.
Yeah, that's how I do for my own personal life. And I guess actually in forest school it's a bit like that as well, isn't it? Because you spend the time, the process observing. So you observe and then you react. You observe, reflect, react and plan for the children and their needs, which you can only really, you can't guess those, you can't predict those, you've got to let the children show you. So
I think I have it's almost two separate ways of dealing with it. When it's mental things, so for example, I tend to go quite like hard line and quite like just cold turkey kind of things. So like when I changed my diet, literally overnight went right. Not cold turkey, but no turkey. And things like, so I've done it quite slowly, but it has been in quite big chunks. So about a month ago, you can unfollow things on Facebook. Yeah. So you're still friends or you're still in the group, whatever. Yeah. I've unfollowed everything.
Yeah.
There is nothing on my Facebook.
Yeah.
And I did it in one kind of like, chunk, I'm not having that anymore.
Yeah.
And I've recently now set up my phone so that Instagram is blocked, the website is blocked, because I know I can't be, I know I will.
That's funny, because I've done that as well.
I took the app off.
Yeah.
And then I started using the browser.
Yeah.
Like this in the internet, and was like, well, this is stupid. I'm just using a less good version of it.
Yeah.
So I now have the app, but it's only connected to the work account.
Yeah.
So I can't really see anything on it.
Yeah.
The work account doesn't follow anyone. It follows like three people.
Yeah.
But you do realize all those little repeat things that you do. You realize how much you get. Like I was realizing on the way to, say, like the loo, I was just getting my phone out, and I was like, why am I doing this? I'm not,
so weird,
I'm not going to be there for long. Why am I suddenly in this habit? But for, I would say, like physical things, like trying to improve my diet, like watching, like recording what I eat, or going to the gym in a certain time, I tend to set my, I don't set any like heart, no, I don't go like, I must go to the gym five times a week. I just go, I'm gonna try and go this many times, and I'm gonna try and do that.
That's what I've done for my alcohol consumption. So I'm not doing dry January, but I am doing like, I'm just gonna drink less, and it's working definitely.
Yeah.
I think because if you make a firm line, unless it's something that's really super bad for you, where you really should set a firm line about never doing that again, then you're far more likely, aren't you, to stick to something it depends on your personality, I suppose. But
Yeah, some people couldn't deal with a little bit.
Yeah, because if you break it as well, the kind of guilt that you feel. I've been thinking a lot about that Marshall Rosenberg thing about the word should recently.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he says that is one word that we should never use. It's a word that creates guilt, creates unhappiness. Why? Why do you ever use that? So the way that we talk to ourselves quite violently, we make a mistake. We go, oh, I should have done that differently. I should have been there. I should have been on time. I should have not eaten that. I should have la 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 la. And actually, that has absolutely no benefit whatsoever. The only thing that it does is create guilt and anxiety within yourself. And instead, you flip that into a positive and go, next time I will blah.
And he has a bit where he says, I choose to because I want to.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh no, that's for haves to, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have to go to work. You choose to go to work. And he's like, the reason can be financial, can be, I choose to go to work because I want to have enough money for my family. Or, and actually once you realise that there are choices, then it gives you that feeling of autonomy.
Yeah.
And I think you feel this segue, right? There's no crowbar at all. That is a really important thing when we're setting goals, either overtly or subtly, I guess, with children or for children, is like that feeling of for the how much autonomy do children feel they've got in that goal?
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience of like teaching was very much that the goals, I think that even in the best scenarios, I thought, looking back, I'm like, no, those were external goals that I was setting.
Mm.
Even to the point of that, like, fake choice, where you would give them, I remember having, like, all of the literacy goals or something,
yeah.
and saying, like, you need to choose 3 out of the 6.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm going, right, but I'm going to make them do the other 3 next half term. Like,
yeah.
and there's no actual autonomy over the goal setting.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah,
and somebody's drawn up those goals in the first place, and then you're, you know, for you as a teacher to then absorb and then spit at the children. Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Lots of goals, academically, don't take into account anything other than your, like, either age or academic age.
Mm.
You know, there's no concept of, all right, but you've just had a new brother, or
know,
actually
also,
you're in a funny school. Or...
Also, if you even step wider than that and think... I'm thinking about this a lot recently, and think about the person or people who are writing those goals down in the first place.
Yeah.
Who even acknowledges that they should be the goals? Let alone, some children will make that because their lives, everything else in their lives is in place, and they have the ability to do that. Why? You know, who are we to decide that those are the things that children, most children, should be able to do by the time they're this old? Who has decided that those are the things that are valuable in society? You know, if you look at the entire curriculum. I had this kind of epiphany.
I mean, you can't
day.
See it, but Gemma has got the red flag out and is waving it on the barricades.
I just had this epiphany the other day, and I just thought, I was thinking about school versus forest school, and I was thinking that actually it does not matter what the heckins you're learning at primary level, at early years in primary. I would hand on heart say, beyond probably reading and writing and a bit of numeracy, beyond that, it does not matter at all the kind of topics or curriculums that you are learning, because what you are learning is how to be alive and how to be a person around other people. So how to be, how to play, how to cooperate, how to listen, how to speak, how to get angry, how to be competitive, how to share, how to, all these kind of things about being human. And above all, you've got to learn to love learning. That's the only thing, really, that you've got to come out of primary school having absorbed. And beyond that, you could be so child-led as a teacher. I mean, it requires more work on the teacher's part to be really observant and look at the children in their class and go, okay, well, such and such is interested in this, so we're going to do some learning about this topic or in this way, and so-and-so needs some support with this kind of skill, so we're going to do a lot of activity to do that at the moment. But the freedom that it offers, and some primary schools like buying in these schemes of work from Babcock or wherever, and they not only are they all doing the same topic, but they're literally teaching from the same PowerPoints. And that was happening a bit when I was still teaching, but I just can't, you know, how frustrating the lack of freedom, and how terrible for the kids that they've just been funneled through this system of, you know, we're all learning about the Great Fire of London now. That's what we're doing. We're all
that is what
doing
all
this,
learn at year 3.
And we all learn about superheroes in spring term. No matter what year we're in, we all do superheroes from preschool up to year 6. You know, and I said, oh, it makes me so mad. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to Bob, what's his name?
Hughes.
Yes, Bob Hughes. So reading his, was it his evolutionary play?
Yes.
Sorry, just leave it. He has a bit, and I've kind of read it and absorbed it, and but also kind of extrapolated afterwards, where he's talking about the 16 acknowledged play types.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've understood it right, he says that is the that's the top level. That's the like primary as in age, but primary as in first lens that you're experiencing through, and that the subject matter is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So
I guess that's what I'm saying.
So rather than it being like, so you can have communicative play, mm-hmm. right? So talking, sharing, doing whatever. Yep. But you could be talking about maths. We could be yep. talking about literacy. We could yep. be talking about geography. Yep. But the top level is like, yep. you need some communicative play. Yep. Because that's you learning to be a human and talking.
Exactly. So that's where I'm linking it back. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I feel like that, which is the most important thing, is being squashed.
Yeah.
In where the seesaw is tipping in the balance of curriculum, because you've got, I've got to cover this content. All these kids have got to know this date by the time mm-hmm. they're this age, or they've
the
got
testables.
To know. Yeah, all yeah. that stuff. So not only are you not giving time to the soft skills, you're actually crushing them. You are going, no, stop communicating. No, stop playing, because we haven't got time for that. We've got to do this thing. Just absorb these facts. Absorb. It's like, it's the opposite of what should be happening. So yeah. Anyway.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine now. Fine.
You got it out.
Need a cup of tea.
So, how do you think? Do you think there is a guide or anything to bear in mind if someone said, well, how do I goal set for my
I don't really like the phrase goal set for
okay,
kids.
Well,
I tell you what I have been thinking, because we've yeah. been thinking about our younger children, haven't we? We think about kindergarten.
Yes.
And thinking about what they've been up to. We've been open for a term and a bit mm-hmm. now. And reflecting and looking at their learning so far, I would not use the word goal setting for those children. I would reflect and say, oh, I perhaps, as a practitioner, haven't offered them enough opportunities to do this. Mm-hmm. Through looking at our observations, I, as a practitioner, need to keep on offering that. And whether they want to take that, that's up to them. But it needs to be my place to offer that, and offer that in a, what's the word, kind of...
Non-judgmental, non-committal,
yeah,
just like...
and easy for them to take part in way. Does that yeah. make, and in stimulating, interesting... And,
so I guess then the thing
non-threatening
the thing then becomes
way.
Doesn't it, if you offer and it's not responded to,
that is fine.
Is there a frequency that you say, oh, I would try again in this long, or do you think you wait for some sort of cue, or because so far being very overt, it's that we've noticed that we haven't got as many maths observations mm-hmm. as we have mm-hmm. other ones.
Yep.
And so we're like, we need to do some more, you know, offer some more maths things. But it's not a... That is top down, because it's us looking at it and going, we haven't got maths observations. Mm. But it's not as if... See, if I was going full reactive, full what do they need... I think I would be waiting for a cue, like the children trying to count with something that's inappropriate, or constantly going, well, which of these is heavy? You know, so I would wait for some cue.
Oh, well, I agree with you, but I kind of feel like I have seen those cues, and I've thought, okay, there is scope here that if we had some more resources, or if we had a game that kind of focused on that a little bit, I'm sure it would be... accepted and taken further.
So I guess it's a skill, isn't it, in observing cues and getting to know yeah. those children, and it's not a formula of, oh, when they start to count, that's when you need to introduce this. And
for some children, they, you know, no matter what lovely, amazing handmade resources you have and what fun games, they're just not interested in that right now, and that's fine. But some children will be, or might be, if they see it around and go, oh, what's that? So I think it's that, like, that Bob Hughes thing about neophilia. It's like the more kind of, without being overwhelming, the more new experiences you can provide, new types of play, new resources, it's all good.
Some children, as young as 5, or maybe even younger, I think, have that thing where they've already picked up on adults who say, I'm no good at maths.
Oh, yeah.
I'm no good at...
completely.
You know, oh, I can't spell. And so the slightest whiff of a subject that they deem unworthy, or, oh, mum and dad are successful, and they both at home say, I'm no good at geography.
Yeah.
The slightest whiff of geography, and they just go, meh.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes it's about presenting it, but presenting it in a way that isn't like, sit down, it's geography for the next hour. Do, you know, if it's just... play,
yeah. Yeah, and also, even though here we are banging on about, you know, lack of curriculum and it being child-led, you have to also be realistic and think that most of these children are going to go to school in the next couple of years,
yeah,
and they are going to be faced with loads and loads of maths. Mm-hmm. And so if we haven't given them, you know, support with that and shown them this kind of stuff, and given offered it to them, yeah, if they want to take it, then that's quite overwhelming for them.
I mean,
to suddenly
that is part of the rationale that I think seeps into Key Stage 2 primary learning, is where people that the same, you know, knock-on thing where you go,
secondary
is coming, you're not going to be, and it's the same as like I see lots of I'm going to say parents online who talk about things, and their rationale for whatever behaviour they've chosen to curb or dissuade is, well, they're not going to be able to when they get to school.
I know.
And you go,
school
some kids are going to go, right, but he's two.
Surely he can
stand on the bench here, or he won't be able to do that. He's not at school. That's why they do it at school when he's five.
And even if someone is five.
Give me the flag, I'm getting.
I know. Like, yeah.
It's just ridiculous that we force everything lower and lower.
Yeah, true.
And then yet, as a society, have this weird, like, oh, kids are getting, you know, they're interested in boys too young and all this. You go, yeah, because you told them when they were three that they were going to go to school and they couldn't. Sorry.
Yeah. He's even dropped his fork.
I dropped his fork. Getting really irate about it.
Do you know what? We've gone quite off topic now. And also,
I don't think we have. I think we talked about goal setting.
Okay, we talked about goal setting in kind of education and on a rant about it. It is also.
Would you like to not next week, but the week after, talk about Bob Hughes' evolutionary playwork?
All day.
Is that the title of the book?
Every week. It's actually called Bob Hughes' Evolutionary Playwork and Reflective Practice.
Can you say it in a way that's clearer for the microphone to pick up?
I think it's called Evolutionary Playwork Theory and Reflective Practice. But there are other Bob Hughes books which I think are slightly more accessible, slightly shorter, and slightly more well-known.
Okay. So maybe we'll talk about Bob Hughes as a person in 2 weeks' time. So not next week, the week after.
Yeah.
So if you've got a bit of time, have a little look.
Yeah. And if, I think, I can't remember if I've said this before, but one thing I think is kind of missing about the podcast is that if you listen regularly and you ever want to get in touch with us to, like, comment on something we've said and go, I disagree because of bloody blah, have you read this? You should. Or to ask a question or anything
like
that.
Bit of academic debate.
Yeah. Or, you know, just chat. Bounce, innit? Then you can email us at childrenoftheforest@outlook.com, and we might set up like a kind of blog page specifically for the podcast maybe in future, but for now, if you've got any suggestions, questions, comments,
let us know.
Let us know.
Right. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.